Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. This is the big conversation. This is the great debate, but it can only be a debate if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. On 44208-601-4555, you call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line. And remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be at zero, or no one will understand either of us, and I'll have to swiftly move on. You can SMS the show at 4478-00-8066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. And welcome to listeners of colourful radio who are listening to us from their very colourful radio station in London, but I hope heard much more widely than that. And remember, listeners to colourful radio, these telephone numbers, etc., are for this show only. But you're very welcome indeed. Now, the Syria war appears in the last few days to have spread even more deeply into neighbouring Lebanon. In the south of Lebanon, to my great surprise, a supporter of Syria, a political activist of some significance in the country, was murdered most foully by 24 bullets in his home, shot dead for supporting Syria. Today, Syria, at least in the form of its Air Force helicopter, fired rockets into a Lebanese northern border town. Now, to be fair, it was a town stuffed full of Takfiri fanatics who were getting ready to invade Syria. But it nonetheless further complicates events and further complicates relations between Syria and Lebanon. The Lebanese government will now come under increased pressure to do and at least say something about it. It puts pressure on the Lebanese resistance, who have been decisively entering the conflict in Syria in the last month or so, and we have discussed that many times before. As far as I know, Hezbollah have said nothing about the Syrian attack on the Lebanese town. It will be interesting to hear what they say, if they say anything at all. And the coup continues in Egypt. There's a lot of gold and brass on show every time the cameras cut to the presidential palace. People are strutting around calling themselves vice presidents and prime ministers or deputy prime ministers. In the case of the head of the army, he is both the head of the army and the deputy prime minister. Oh, he's also the defense minister. You get the picture? There's a coup in Egypt. A cabinet has been formed with the majority party in the country, namely the Islamists in either its Muslim Brotherhood incarnation or the An-Nur party, the Salafists, who between them got 75% of the vote in the parliament, now abolished. And of course, Morsi was the elected president on behalf of the Muslim Brotherhood. Neither of those is included in the cabinet. Of course, neither of them would have taken a place in the cabinet because their stand is that the military junta is illegitimate. That hasn't stopped that great Democrat, Mohamed al-Baradei. He's now finally the vice president of Egypt without anyone having to cast a single vote in his favour. Couldn't make it up. Now, the third of the triptych this evening is the extraordinary developments in the British Liberal Democrat Party. I say British because it's necessary to distinguish it as such, because it behaves more like an Israeli political party. This is the second time that this has happened. Jenny Tong, MP, now a baroness in the House of Lords, was thrice suspended from the Liberal Democrats for telling the truth about Palestine. At least she got a seat in the House of Lords. I'm not sure what will happen to the latest victim, David Ward. He made a very foolish mistake a few months ago when failing to differentiate between Jews and Zionists, something which the PLO was always very careful to do, but Mr. Ward was not. But he's been suspended for telling nothing but the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. David Ward has been suspended by the Liberal Democrats admittedly only over the summer holidays, but nonetheless, it's happened to please the Israel lobby in this country, which has put the Liberal Democrats under tremendous pressure to discipline him. What did he say in his tweet that's got him suspended from the parliamentary party? He said that finally the tide has turned against the Zionists in public opinion. That's absolutely, incontestably, ineluctably, absolutely true. And he asked the question, it's a perfectly legitimate one, how long can the apartheid state of Israel last? It's a very good question, and more people in the world are asking it, including, if they had any sense, more and more people inside Israel. In the last few days, the European Union has gotten itself all hot and bothered about the admittedly important question of illegal Israeli settlements in the West Bank. Well, they're only 45 years late, but it's nonetheless important. But of course, it's a tiny fraction of the big picture. The big picture is this. Most Palestinians don't live in the West Bank. Jerusalem is in bondage, as is the Galilee, as is Bethlehem. All of Palestine, from the river to the sea, is occupied territory. And therefore, saying that you will ban the produce of illegal Israeli settlements when you only mean a tiny number of those Israeli settlements is a step forward, no doubt, but a fairy step rather than a giant step. But it's enough for Netanyahu to threaten to break off negotiations which aren't even happening anyway. All of these and more, because this is the 10th anniversary of the death, the strange death, of Dr. David Kelly. You'll remember him, the world-renowned scientist who chose to commit suicide with a blunt penknife under a tree, which took him hours to die from in great agony, when as a renowned scientist, he presumably knew a potion or two that would have dispatched himself very much more quickly and painlessly. The reason I believe that he was killed is because of the whole canard, the whole Tower of Babel of lies, of which he was inextricably, though involuntarily, a part in the run-up to the war on Iraq. Some of my colleagues were at the 10th anniversary commemoration of the strange death of Dr. Kelly, and it's an issue that caught my eye and might just catch yours also. It goes without saying, these are my views. They're not anybody else's views. They're not views that anyone paid me to have, and no one would be able to talk me out of, unless you're a particularly good debater, in which case I want to hear from you on 44208601455. Jamal has done that. He's from Bedford in England and wants to talk about Syria. Jamal, welcome to the show. Jamal, you're on the air.
Thank you very much, George.
You're welcome, sir. Go ahead.
I'm Jamal Holloway. I'm from Bedford, actually.
Yeah, Jamal, you have to have.
I've been living in Bedford for 30 years. I've been watching Press TV for so long now.
Yes.
It's my favorite channel. And
yes.
Thank you for working there, actually.
Welcome.
What I'm trying to say, I can't say much about Egypt because I think everybody wants to become maybe president there because everybody's fighting to be for certain things, actually. Now, it's concerning Syria, actually.
Yeah, but Jamal, let me stop you. I did say at the beginning of the show, it's the last time I'm going to say it, you must have the volume on your television down at zero, because we're hearing you twice. So turn your volume down right now and carry on speaking, please.
Yeah, that's it, yeah, it's down now.
Go ahead now.
Okay then, thanks. What I'm saying, Mr. Galloway, it's about the war in Syria.
Yeah.
It's so much intervention with the rebels. And I want the rebels to realize they are fighting their own blood brothers. and they don't have to get involved with other people, like how you said before, they eat human heart and livers. And if they encourage that, they will get the disaster after their victory. And there should be no victory for them. If they should come in terms, lay down their weapons. Bashar al-Assad is not a bad man, actually. The way he talks, he's not a dictator. He's a gentleman, but with a force to get rid of him, it's impossible.
Well, I think the point is, Jamal, the point is that we need to get to the Geneva conference under the two superpowers' chairmanship, and we need to sit there for as long as possible in order to arrive at a political consensus for a transition to democratic rule in Syria. That's what Kofi Annan proposed nearly 2 years ago and was ignored, even though he was the UN envoy. That's what Lakhdar Brahimi is now proposing, though he's being ignored, even though he is also a UN envoy. That's what Russia wants. That's what the United States says that it wants. And that's what the Syrian government has agreed to. The only parties who have refused to do so are the so-called rebels and the people who are backing them, giving them murderous weapons and millions of dollars. But we need a transition to democracy in Syria. The days of dictatorship are going and are gone in some places already in the Arab world, and eventually all of them will have to go. But the best way to get to democracy is by negotiating that transition, not murdering scores of thousands of people, cutting open their chests and eating their hearts, or finding a priest or a bishop to cut his head off and video it for the entertainment of the others in the barracks afterwards. Jamal, thanks for that call. That's one of the subjects we're talking about this evening, Egypt and Syria and Palestine in the form of the British Liberal Democrats, who've just expelled or suspended, rather, yet another of their very small number of parliamentarians, all in defence of Israel. Posing the question that I posed at the beginning, are the Lib Democrats, led by Nick Clegg, a British party or an Israeli one? I think it's a legitimate question. 44208601 4555. That's the number to call me. Now, my dear friend Roshan Mohammed Saleh, a very brave and talented correspondent, is currently in Cairo, and I hope he's on the line talking to me now. Roshan, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, George. Hi.
Well, I'm very, very glad that we've made contact, and I wish you a successful and safe passage in the work that you're going to be doing there, which is to bring to Press TV the pulse of what's happening there. And I think the pulse is racing quite fast at the moment, Roshan.
Yeah, it's quite chaotic here. It's a very divided country, a lot of rancor, very, very polarized. I've been spending quite a lot of time with the Muslim Brotherhood, and they're very defiant and very angry. Obviously, they feel as though a military coup has just taken place and their opponents couldn't beat them at the ballot box, so therefore had to resort to getting the army in. They're continuing to protest in Cairo, very near my hotel. Just the other day, about seven people were killed in clashes between Muslim Brotherhood supporters and the army and the police as well. But I think the Muslim Brotherhood, their reputation really has been damaged in Egypt by the one-year Morsi presidency. The economy tanked. They've alienated the opposition, the media. They got involved in some quite unsavory sectarian politics, you know, concentrating on issues like Syria rather than what's happening in their backyard in Egypt. So I think the Muslim Brotherhood, really, there's no coming back for Morsi. They're finished politically for the time being, and they're really going to have to rebuild. The opposition, meanwhile, are quite divided as well, it has to be said. Apart from opposing Morsi, they don't really have much in common. you know, Egypt's economic problems are really are intractable. And who knows, you know, they're flirting with the military now, but maybe in a year's time, the military might chuck them out as well. They also seem to have quite an irrational hatred of the Muslim Brotherhood and political Islam in general. And the media is very biased. It's spewing out a lot of inaccuracies. Muslim Brotherhood kind of channels have been closed down. So I don't think many people are putting too much, trust in the opposition, the liberal secular opposition. The army, which is the third kind of string to this bow, they say they've saved the nation. They prevented civil war and chaos by unseating a very unpopular president. But, you know, the army is still funded by the U.S. after all, and it seems to be cleaning up Sinai at the moment to protect Israel. We're hearing reports that Palestinians are being detained at Cairo airport. They aren't getting through the Rafah border. So it seems as though the military is, you know, it's a mixed bunch as well, and they don't want to rule directly. I think all they want to do is kind of preserve their economic interests, preserve the peace treaty with Israel, and protect the Suez Canal. And I suppose the last thing I want to say is that, you know, Israel and the U.S. must be laughing at the moment because, you know, I think they're very happy with a divided, weak, chaotic Egypt. And as long as Camp David and Suez are protected, then they're laughing.
Absolutely. Syria's in pieces. Iraq previously was broken. And now Egypt is broken. That's the three most important and powerful Arab countries hitherto in confrontation with Israel. So it's not a bad outcome from their point of view. I just wanted one other question, Roshan, if I may. In your discussions with the Muslim Brotherhood, is there any self-criticism at all? Do they acknowledge the absolute disaster of Morsi's 1 year in power?
No, they're concentrating very much on mobilizing their own support, which is probably about 20% of the population. They are continually coming out saying that this is a military coup and that Morsi needs to be restored. But I really think that's pie in the sky. There doesn't seem to be much self-reflection at all. They feel as though they didn't have a chance. When they were in power, the opposition was blocking them. I've never heard one kind of even ounce of self-reflection from them. Rather, they're trying to play up the military coup aspect of all this and saying how unfair it is. But ultimately, I think that a lot of the street politics that they're playing, maybe, I think deep down, the leaders anyway, realize that the game is over. Morsi is not coming back. And I think they just want to prove how strong they are, how much support they have on the streets, so that they can ultimately do a deal and their leaders will not be, you know, imprisoned for 20 years and have all their assets frozen, and that there will be some kind of, a window for them to re-enter the political fray.
Roshan, stay safe. God bless you. Thanks very much indeed. That's our correspondent, Roshan Mohamed Saleh, who is in Cairo, and we'll be hearing plenty, I hope, from him. 44208-601-4555. That's the number to call me. Farouk from London has on Egypt. Farouk, welcome to the show.
George, salam alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Go ahead.
Ramadan Mubarak. Well, it's to do with Egypt. I mean, you know, when you look at the broader picture, in the sense like, you know, democracy was not really meant to be successful in Egypt. If you look at the Ikhwan, if they've been around for the last 80 years, I think they should have been more prepared politically, with the insurmountable task in front of them. Because, you know, all these, like I said, the U.S., the army is under the U.S. payroll, and all these judges and Jerushi, you name them, Constitutional Court, whatever it is, they are ex-Mubarak people. They are people of the Mubarak creed, to speak. Such case stuck against them, no way the other thing would be successful. No way that democracy would have worked in Egypt. Probably it'll take some kind of new generation to come along. Probably have that different insight in terms of politics to be able to accept the democracy as probably in some kind of level that will balance up the way people think about other people's rights and you know, have a real democracy in place.
Well, look, the case I made last week stands that Morsi was a disastrous president. He wasn't even the best Muslim Brotherhood candidate on the ballot paper. He was a very poor choice. But we have had a military coup. Admittedly, there was a mass movement against them on the streets of all over Egypt, not just Cairo. And that mass movement, if it had come to fruition and the government had been forced from office, that would have been a revolutionary democratic outcome. But people in gold braid and uniform, picking and choosing ministers and presidents and vice presidents, is simply unacceptable. None of us can accept it. So I'm not with Morsi, neither am I with the coup. That makes me, I think, probably in a position that many millions of Egyptians are also in. And that dynamic will play itself out over the next weeks, months, and maybe years. Rufaya is on the line from Bahrain on Egypt. Rufaya, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hi, Mr. Galloway. Good evening. My name is Rufia.
Rufia, welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you. I want to say something about Egypt.
Yeah.
And before I say that, I want to make it clear I am not pro any government or any Arab ruler. I don't have no faith in any one of them, and they are all the same to me. But I want to, since I am a clinical psychologist, I want to talk about some aspects of what's going in Egypt from a psychological point of view.
How wonderful. And we should clear the show and let you speak for the next hour. Go on.
Thank you. I would like to talk specifically about Mohamed Baradei.
Yes.
Mohamed Baradei, as we all know, was the head of IAEA, and he went to Egypt to become, you know. So what he did, he felt that he lost his position in the world, so he had to reassert himself and come back to be somebody again. So he became the spokesperson for the opposition, and through that, he put one foot in the door, becoming the vice president. And when Becky Anderson from CNN asked him a few weeks ago when she was in Cairo whether he wanted to be president, he said no, and that his family was against that. They didn't approve of it. But we see now that he did all he could to become vice president, because as with all Arab rulers, once they lose that seat, they feel they are nobody, because indeed they are nobody, in my opinion.
Some of them are nobody, and that's right.
So they have to reassert themselves somehow, even if they have to kill their own people to hold on to that seat. And this is happening, as you know, everywhere. So to them, they must be a ruler or have a title or have a seat, otherwise they have no self-esteem, they have no self-worth, they don't feel that they are somebody, so they have to do this. And this is what Mohamed Baradei did. He, you know, he became, in his opinion, nobody when he was no longer the head of IAEA, so he had to become somebody in Egypt. So he did all his effort to...
Yeah. Well, he's become somebody via the bayonets of the Egyptian army, which, as we know, is trained and financed by the United States of America, and for more than 30 years, loyally buttressed the dictatorship of Hosni Mubarak. So if he feels he's somebody, becoming the vice president of a country on the barrel of a gun, he's welcome to it. Not many of the rest of us, and certainly not history, will treat it as being somebody. But I think you should come back here, Rufia, every single week and give us an analysis of the brains, or otherwise, of the Arab rulers. That would be very, very useful. 44208-601-4555 is the number to call. Call us, we'll call you back. Get a clear line, and remember. If you get on the TV with me, the volume on your TV has got to be down at zero. We're talking about the Liberal Democrats. That's the British Liberal Democrats, not the Israeli Liberal Democrats, though you can sometimes not tell the difference. God willing, I'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. We need your calls if we're going to have a great debate. 44208-601-4555 is the number to call. We're talking about a tweet. Imagine a member of parliament, supposedly a free and independent parliament, has been suspended by his party, in this case, the Liberal Democrats, for a tweet. And what did the tweet say? It said that Israel was an apartheid state. Well, that's obviously a statement of fact, not even opinion. He said he questioned how long would it last. Who in their right mind is not questioning how long this apartheid state might last? And he said that finally, public opinion was beginning to turn against the Zionists. Again, a statement of incontestable fact, but enough to get David Ward MP, my neighbouring Member of Parliament in the city of Bradford, kicked out of his party, admittedly only for 6 weeks. But it shows you the extent to which the Liberal Democrats, indeed all three of the cheeks of the same backside that are the mainstream British political parties, are prepared to go in order to appease Israel and those who support it here in this country and abroad. Now, we're also talking about Egypt and about Syria. So let's hear from Abdulaziz, who is in Cairo and who wants to talk about Egypt. Abdulaziz, welcome.
Salaam alaikum, George.
Alaikum salam. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, please.
How are you?
By the grace of God, I'm good, but we need to press on. So thanks. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to tell you that the demon of our time called democracy is just hypocrisy. It has never worked, and it will never work. What these people are not telling us is that what is good for the gander is not good for the good anywhere. And from British to America to Egypt to Syria, you look at it. Democracy is a system that is double standard. It can never work. So the earlier the better. The earlier the better we know the truth. Look, the socialist government of Russia, how did it end? Today, what we have in Russia is even a disaster. You cannot call it democracy. You cannot call it socialism. So what America is not telling us, even in U.S., is democracy working? It's a failure. That is on one part. Second part, I like your program. I just want you to be careful on the terms you use. You use takfiri for some people. You don't know the meaning of takfiri. The people that you are working for or that are telling you about takfiri, you need to ask them what is takfiri. They are the takfiri, and they are telling people takfiri. So in Iran, where they claim to have democracy, what is the sign of Salafi there? You cannot even talk as a Salafi in Iran. So please avoid the word takfiri. I like you, and I don't want you to fall into the danger of using religious sentiments.
I'll tell you what I do, Abdulaziz. But before I do, I must presage it with this. Nobody tells me what to do. Not Iran, not Press TV, not Al Mayadeen TV, not Russia Today, certainly not any British Prime Minister. Absolutely nobody on this earth tells me what to do. So if I use a word, it's because I chose to use it. So I'd appreciate it if you would at least pay me that respect of believing that I choose my own words and my own descriptions. And I didn't use the word takfiri in isolation. I said takfiri fanatics, takfiri extremists. And that's exactly what they are. Not every takfiri is an extremist. Not every Wahhabi is an extremist or fanatic. Not every sincere, strict Orthodox Muslim is a so-called fundamentalist. There's nothing wrong with being a fundamentalist in religion. What's wrong is extremism. What's wrong is fanaticism. What's wrong is sectarianism. What's wrong is thinking that your particular brand of Islam is the only legitimate brand and that everyone else can have their hearts cut out and eaten. That's what's wrong. And that's why I talk about, in this case, Morsi's disastrous decision to call on these Takfiri fanatics in Egypt to go and join the international effort to tear Syria into pieces, not least because his own country was falling around his ears. That's why I oppose the people in Syria from wherever they've come, either the Netherlands or England or Pakistan or Afghanistan or Libya or Chechnya or wherever they came from, who think that there's anything Islamic about cutting the head off a Roman Catholic priest or beheading a bishop of the Orthodox Church. That's why I call these people Takfiri fanatics. You get that? Go ahead. Abdulaziz, respond. Oh, well, seems I won that argument. 442-08-601 is the number, 601-4555. That was Abdulaziz from Cairo in Egypt. This is Niazi in London on Syria. My goodness, it's a cook's tour this evening. Niazi, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Galloway. I hope you're in good health always.
By the grace of God, yes, thank you.
I'm just concerned about the whole Middle East, basically. The butchers, the children and the women, the elder people has been butchered, they've been killed, they've been harassed. You said earlier on your show that the days of the dictatorship is gone. Well, I think it's not gone. It's really a transition from one particular group or one particular person to the whole Zionist regime.
Yeah.
So just because they are just taking over. So if they are trying to put a puppet government to in everywhere, so that they have the control over them. So that means that they are controlling, but they are just they got puppets working for them. And the next issue that I want to raise is the United Nations. Mr. Don Ki-moon or Ban Ki-moon, whatever. He's just concerned about certain things, but he cannot do anything. He is not capable of doing anything. He is just good for the Western countries.
Mr. Don Ki-moon, I would call him. He's the worst Secretary General that we've ever had, and we've had some pretty bad ones. The United Nations is a complete spectator in what's going on. The decisions about Western policy are being made in London and Washington. Paris would like to catch up, but they're being made in London and Washington, which means effectively they're being made in Washington. But the one difference I'd have with you, Niazi, is this, and I've said this many times. Neither Washington nor London are run by James Bonds. They're run by Austin Powers. They cannot, even if they would like to, manipulate tens, scores of millions of people in the Arab world. If the Arabs decide to take their own destiny into their own hands, it's absolutely possible for them to do so. But if they go around thinking that they are merely pieces on a chessboard, which a James Bond figure in London or Washington is playing, then that's exactly what they'll be for as long as they believe it. Niazi, thanks for the call. Abbas is on the line, also in London, but this time on Egypt. Abbas, welcome. Did we lose that call? David Ward made a mistake a few months ago. It may have been an innocent mistake. He came to the Palestine issue quite late in life, but nonetheless, welcome. And he perhaps misspoke or just misunderstood in comments that he made, which I condemned at the time. But that's not what he's been suspended for. He's been suspended today because of telling the truth about Palestine and Israel. Walters is on the line from Norway about Syria. Walters, welcome.
Thank you, Judge.
Welcome, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, the point I just have to make about Syria is that the so-called rebels are losing the war by military means.
For sure.
They have to come back to the negotiating table because that is the only means. I don't support Assad staying there. But the procedure that is going on is going to lead the rebels into a danger place. And those countries supporting the rebels have to be careful, because the recent development in the rebels have shown that they are not out for the good of Syrians. And even the Israelis that are supporting by proxy or directly, they should know that the only preferable and potential neighbor to Israel are the Palestinians. That's just my contribution.
Well, it's a very good contribution, and I couldn't have put it better myself. So I thank you for it. Walter's in Norway on Syria. Nidal is in London, and he wants to talk about Egypt. Nadal, welcome. Nadal, put your television down. I'm going to have to press on. Nadal, you lost Hello. Your chance. You Are you me? There?
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me, Mr. Galloway?
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you very much for your show and all the respect for you being a very respectful person.
Thank you.
First of all, I would like to talk about the situation in Egypt and how we are living the new world order, and how our countries, we are watching our countries being turned into failed states one by one.
Yep.
So they could easily control them. This is the new type of army. This is the new type of war, Mr. Galloway, is to turn a city, a state into a failed state so it could easily be controlled. And their economies are crumbling because of the rise of the giant competitions from China, from India, from Brazil. They want to ensure that they continue controlling all those countries.
Nadal, there's not much profit. Not much profit to be had in controlling Egypt. I mean, Egypt's costing them money, not making them money.
It is costing money its own people, Mr. Galloway. It is costing money from Egypt itself. Egypt, let us not forget that Egypt is controlling a very, very important canal.
That's a good point.
Let us not forget that Egypt is a leader in the Arab world. Lots of Arabs look at Egypt and what is happening in Egypt and thinking of it. It's always been a role model for all the Arab countries, Egypt. And let us just not hope that Mr. al-Sisi, who has graduated in 2006 from the American Army War College, which its main goal is to help world leaders, let's not say help, or teach world leaders how to teach them in advanced strategies. Let us just hope that al-Sisi's strategy isn't to change Egypt into a failed state. I am not with Morsi. I am not with the Muslim Brotherhood. I am with democracy. I am with legitimacy. But what has happened in Egypt and the coup actually is very dangerous to Egypt. It is very dangerous.
Nadal, I've got to stop you because so many people are trying to get through. But thanks for a very powerful call. That's Nadal from Libya on Egypt. Trolls is in Denmark, wants to talk about Syria. Trolls, welcome.
Yes, hi. And it's wonderful that you're back. You were gone for a little while.
Thank you.
I would like to ask you, can you confirm what I heard on Russia today, that Al-Qaeda very soon will declare a part of Syria, probably where the Kurds are concentrated, in that area, they will establish an Al-Qaeda state. I heard it several times today, and I need somebody to confirm this.
They have, as a matter of fact, already declared emirates, which they say that they have turned into the Islamic Emirates of Syria. And that's the kind of Arab world that we'd have if these people were to be victorious. Instead of the curse of 23 Arab countries, we'd have 233 or 23,000 Islamic Emirates all facing each other, all fighting each other, all arming themselves to confront each other, each with a regime, each with an army, each with its own take on the way forward for the Arabs and the Muslims. And indeed, those Emirates would increasingly be based around sectarian divide. So you'd have Sunni Emirates, Shia Emirates, Christian Emirates, Kurdish Emirates, and so on, Druze Emirates. you'd have any number of emirates. How about that for divide and rule? Trolls in Denmark, thanks. Abbas is in London on Egypt. Abbas, welcome.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
How are you?
By the grace of God, good. Go ahead.
Do you remember the Syrian rebel who ate the heart of the government soldier for Assad? Yeah.
Who could forget it?
Yes. He was interviewed by the BBC, I think last month or something, and you could understand why he did it. He said, like, his family's been killed by them. He said he found a video footage on his phone of him raping and torturing a Syrian woman. Yeah. What I've seen from you is that you do many good things, George. You support Palestine, but you support all the uprisings. But why don't you support the Syrian uprising?
Well, partly because they eat people's hearts and then claim that they did so because before they ate their heart, they looked at film on their video, which helpfully contained film of the person whose heart they were about to eat, raping and killing people. Abbas, if you believe that, you'll believe anything. And I don't believe that someone called Abbas living in London in 2013 would believe anything. But that's only one of the reasons why. Syria is a sophisticated, modern, Levantine civilization which will never agree to live the kind of lives that Al-Qaeda and people like them want Muslims to live. The Syrians are not Saudis. They are not Afghans. They will never catch on to the joys of the Takfiri fanatic way of life. It's just a matter of fact. So I support a plural Syria where Christians and Muslims of all kinds and where Kurdish and Druze and Arab people live side by side in, I hope, after the transition, a democratic country. I said here many times, and if you're a regular, you'll know this, that the Syrian people are as entitled to rise up and try to overthrow their government as any other. What they're not entitled to do is demand that I should support Britain and America bombing their country and killing their people. And I shall not do so. And if you know me, you know exactly why. So, the bottom line is this. The so-called Syrian revolution has been perverted, and I say perverted, into a sick, sectarian murder fest, which has drowned Syria in blood, which has ripped Syria apart for the entertainment of people who care nothing for Muslims of any kind, nothing for Arabs of any kind. This, as my colleague Roshan was saying from Cairo, is the point. All of this is being done for the entertainment, for the edification of Western countries who have nothing but contempt for Arabs and Muslims as a whole, whichever way they hold their hands when they're praying. Get with the program, Abbas. Your revolution has been defeated. And let's hope Syria can now transit from dictatorship to democracy. Abdurrahman is on the line from Egypt, on Egypt. Abdurrahman, welcome to the show.
Yes, Mr. Gharavi. Mr. Gharavi, I'd like, first of all, to thank you for this great program, and I'd like to shed light that as my English language is not as perfect, but try to explain what I want to see, what I want to say for you. First of all, I'd like to support you and say, Mr. Gharavi, all of freedom people, all of freedom Egyptian, all of Egyptian people was praying for you and support you because of your very, very impressive commitment for the freedom and human rights in Gaza and in Egypt also and Syria.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
This is number one. Number two, there is a point I'd like to shed light on it on Egypt. Before our elected president, Dr. Mohamed Morsi, because he was a president, there is some groups of people in Egypt, they are believers on guns. he believes on clashing course and RBGs. These groups before that, when the other groups discussed with them, please put these guns behind of you and go to vote in the voted boxes. Please go to show the world your voices.
I'll tell you what, Abdurrahman, the line is just not clear enough, I'm afraid, to continue. I'm grateful to you for the call and for the kind remarks that you made. Last call is from New York, Ali, on Syria. Ali, go ahead, my friend.
Hi, Mr. George.
Welcome, sir. Go ahead quickly.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to talking to you. And we all pray, our family pray for your success.
Thank you.
You are doing a great job in the heart of hypocrisy against the world.
Thank you, sir.
I would just like to ask what these Arab imperialism people, what these Arab kings they want from Syria, what kind of Islam they are putting forward by killing the people, then as you're talking, like chopping the hearts and eating the organs.
Well, of course, this is all being paid for and done by people who don't care anything about Islam and don't care anything about the Arabs. The French ruled Syria and would be ruling it still if they had not been kicked out of it. The British ruled Arabia from Iraq all the way to Palestine and would still if they hadn't been kicked out of it. The reality is these people want to occupy the Arabs in order to steal their things. And secondarily, it is secondarily, but it's importantly, they want to protect their illegitimate settler state called Israel from any developments in the Arab lands. So I think that we should treat that kind of cynicism with a very small pinch of salt and throw it away over our shoulders. The Arabs and the Muslims' fates lie with themselves. The great only appear to be great as long as the rest of us are on our knees. If we get up off our knees and stand up, we'll find out the great ain't so great after all.
Hello, if you'd comment on your name and location, you left my number. And just make sure it's about your
telephone volume
700.
Can you spell your name
for me? Yeah, I know. You redirect me through the phone number and then we'll be back.
Can I have your telephone number?